I think they like you, Steve.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
It's the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
No place to go, darling.
Well, it was 20-3 when I went to bed. Then I woke up and it wasn't. Packers 24, Bears 23.
Yep.
Aaron friggin' Rodgers.
I knew it when he came back in. I just knew it.
Looked like he didn't have a knee when he went down. Looked like his knee was completely blown out.
My wife said he was faking.
That's what I said.
I said, no, he's not faking.
Well, come
on. Carting him off. Then why does he come back?
Well, and they said whenever anybody gets carted off, they never come back. And he did.
And he had the most annoying post-game quote. He said, I heard the ovation, so I said, well, we might as well win.
You know what?
He just
needs to be slapped. But we didn't slap him.
We had the chance.
And he scored 3 touchdowns.
Instead. In the fourth quarter.
With about, 12 minutes to go?
So this high is vaunted.
Actually, 3 touchdowns in 10 minutes.
So this awesome
13
Bears.
Minutes was the first one.
So this awesome Bears defense with Vic Fangio and all his toys and everything there, and they gave 3 touchdowns in the fourth quarter. So as much as you want to get on the coach and Trubisky, and I know that Hamp will have something to say much more insightful than I, but this Bears defense was supposed to be designed to shut that down, and they instead gave up 3 touchdowns, including the final one, which looked like Pop Warner. I don't know what happened there when Randall Cobb just went down the middle of the field.
There was no one there.
That's crazy. Someone blew an assignment.
You know, that's blown coverage, but let me say the first cliche of the morning. You got to learn how to close. You got to learn how to win.
Yeah, it was a blown save.
So?
The defense blew the save. Kyle Fuller, ball in his, hit him in the hand.
Yes. Well, it's been a problem. That has been a problem.
It's too much.
A lot of positives.
Let's talk about something.
A lot of positives. For 45 minutes, it was all Bears. Actually, 47 and a half minutes.
He looked so happy when he came back out, Aaron.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, like, look what's going on.
I heard the ovation, so I decided I might as well would shut up.
They were booed off the field. The great Green Bay fans booed them off the field.
That's absolutely right.
Well, listen, the best team won.
Yeah. Yeah. We give the new coaching staff and a partially rookie
quarterback positives.
A mulligan. They have Monday Night Football next, another nationally televised game. If they do this at Soldier Field, I got other things to do this fall.
By the way, the lamest thing yesterday was a tie. When is the NFL going to get rid of the ties? Play until all the players have collapsed. 21-21
that game, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure if they were still playing, anyone would have scored. They kept missing field goals, again, field goals blocked. And
typically, opening weekend has a lot of bad football, and it did yesterday, and you had upsets, and you had things that went the way you would expect. And we'll have Dave spell it all out to you throughout the morning. But let's do the top 6 at 6.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Get your kicks. With the top 6 at 6, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
The following top 6 is completely Trump-free for your enjoyment. Item number 1. There's a new iPhone coming out for you iPhone people. Apple is expected to announce a new iPhone on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
How many?
Next!
I think you're the only one on our show without an iPhone.
No, wasn't there somebody else that was Android? I thought there was somebody else that was Android on the show.
I got the
iPhone. Is it just me? Am I the only rebel?
I have a hard time. I have an iPhone. I think it's a 6 or 6S or something like that.
Oh, good God, man. Get into 2018.
I know, but the problem, I feel like you get to a certain point where...
6S? What is it, gas-powered?
You have to put a down payment on a phone, and I don't feel like doing that. Like, I'd rather be phoneless than put a down payment.
Here's the thing. Amazon's here to stay, and so's the iPhone. I think I heard the duck quack. The CEO of CBS quit on Sunday, just hours before the New Yorker published an article detailing accusations by six more women of sexual misconduct, which Les Moonves, the most powerful man in television up until yesterday, has denied. The most troubling of all of these seems to be a doctor. He went to a doctor's appointment. The female doctor was then, what amounts to, if you believe her side of the story, sexually assaulted during the course of the appointment. And this seems to be a woman he didn't know prior to the appointment. Wow. You talk about a guy out of control. You can't use the excuse that it was 25 years ago. He tried that. And he is now out. He is due somewhere between $150 and $200 million if he was fired without cause. Ooh, I think they have cause. But that money is being held in escrow. Like an eBay deal, until they determine whether or not he is guilty of all of this. Expect there to be some sort of settlement in the low tens of millions, between zero and 50. And then Les will go off into the sunset. It's going to be a little awkward for his wife.
Or he'll be a consultant.
Oh, yeah, he'll be fine. Yeah, he'll get work somewhere. Because, you know, it's not like one of these front and center deals. He's not Kevin Spacey. He's not somebody that is dependent upon an audience coming after him and supporting him. He's a business guy.
Another high-profile New Yorker, too.
That's all New Yorkers. All New Yorkers and Green Bay people, they're all trouble. Who is his wife? His wife, the big brother, the talk host. What is her name?
I forgot her name.
Julie Chen.
Julie Chen. A little awkward at work for Julie.
Yeah.
Because Julie's got to come in now. And I sort of feel like she was Hillary Clinton after she declared Bill Clinton was innocent of the Monica Lewinsky stuff. It was a vast conspiracy. She defended her husband and defended him hard. And now she got to go back on TV and either ignore it or talk about it. So I feel badly for her.
He was the CEO of the parent company and she worked for him?
Yes. And she might still defend him just because he's quit. And
yeah.
Just, you know,
well, sure. Yeah,
I know. We've seen a lot of wives who defend even when they know what their husband. You know,
well, you got to live with them.
Yeah. So.
So that happened, and Lorraine Morton, Evanston's first African American mayor, died over the weekend. She was 99. 99. Did you know her, Dave, from all the
years? I did know her a little bit. I mean, I hadn't talked to her in years, but she was a Northwestern alum, I believe, and a very nice lady.
Probably the biggest story of the weekend is this. Quack. Quack. The duck is dozing today.
I didn't think it was appropriate after
you made an editorial call there. Good call.
Whoops.
Keep an eye on this. Hurricane Florence is strengthening, and Hurricane Florence is incredibly dangerous. And Hurricane Florence may be the first Category 4 storm to hit the Carolinas since the early 80s, 30-plus years ago. And was that Hugo, I think, if I remember correctly. It wasn't long after I left South Carolina when I was just a boy. The National Hurricane Center warned that the tropical storm could become a Category 3 today, and it could make landfall in North and South Carolina with an 80-mile-wide a bomb zone, if you will. Tom Skilling is going to be on this morning to talk about it, and if anybody knows anything about it, it'd be Tom. And finally, let me go live to Flushing Meadows, where Sandberg has been standing by all weekend. Serena Williams, right or wrong? Qualified right?
Overall.
Qualified wrong.
Overall, she has some points. Probably let emotions get a little bit of the best
of her. I give her style points. I thought that line was great. You stole a point from me. You're a thief. You're a thief because you stole that point from me. I'm like, oh, burn. Good,
John McEnroe. John McEnroe said, look, you would not believe the crap I used to say to these guys. Who else? James Blake came out and said, men said worse things all the
Andy
time.
Andy Roddick said it. They all said it.
And that's
it,
right? What she said.
Yeah.
I mean, she said that men get away with
there.
It.
Yeah. And the coaching thing, I think, Dave, you would agree, that's the bigger problem, because her coach in his whole career, they all coach from the stands. They all know they say it all the time. Nobody's ever been called.
What defines coaching from the stands? What sort of hand signals can you give to a tennis player?
He was telling her to go to the net, but she didn't see it, so that's why she got so angry. She didn't even see that she was being coached.
Can I be the first to say that's a stupid rule?
But I think that warning.
I mean, unless a guy's standing up with like flares that land airplanes and completely distracting the crowd, who cares if he's coaching for the stands?
Well, it's a rule, though. It's a rule. But the thing is, the umpire, right, that's the umpire called it. And so that was her first warning. So then when she smashed the racket, usually that would be your first warning. But she, you know, So
I don't understand,
like,
by
really
the way,
formal.
I don't understand how a guy with his back to the crowd can make a call on what's happening in the crowd.
Yeah, well, you can see the player's box, but you know that's where it's left to the umpire discretion.
A lot of discretion.
Yeah, but I guess that's the issue with this umpire, right? This umpire is more formal in his judging of the tennis match, and because of using that archaic rule.
Well, Dave, she lost. What's the rule here? The unwritten rule. Don't make yourself the story, especially in a championship match like a Grand Slam final.
I thought, and I believe that she had a legitimate point and a legitimate argument. You reach a point, you state your case, and then you can't just keep going and going like that. And I understand she wanted an apology. I mean, and she probably deserves an apology,
but not right there.
Yeah. When they brought the
referees out and they were like, the looks in their eyes were scared to death. Naomi Osaka played amazing. So she beat her anyway. She was beating her anyway. Yeah. So
Mary, explain this to me. She's had so much success in Grand Slams, including the U.S. Open. And she says every time she comes there, this happens to her. And I mean,
She has had more. I thought this was a cumulative thing, to be honest. You know, this year was a big deal. This is her daughter is turning one this year. Right. Last year
she was an emotional mess. She almost died a year ago.
For all these, dealt with. Oh no, we're talking about Serena.
Oh yeah, but she's
but
the
they've
girl's
dealt
20.
With. Racial issues, you know, like when they wore the beads in Venus's first U.S. Open, they were like, you can't wear the beads because they fall on the court. Like, I think it was a cumulative.
And she said she's the only one getting drug tested.
Yeah, she gets drug tested all the time. Mm-hmm. But that's
Yeah, but that's not in the moment. In the moment.
Right.
But I think it was cumulative.
But she brought it up in the moment.
Because
the
as a woman,
umpire,
sometimes I maybe blow out of things out of proportion, like if a drawer is left open or something, or a closet isn't closed, and then I get really angry, and it probably is a cumulative effect of people not wiping up water around the sink and closing the door.
It's a difference between men and women.
Leaving Coke boxes around.
That makes a lot of sense.
Men leave doors open. All right, we're way late here. Let's take this break. We'll come back.
That's all today for the Top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Well, thank the former boss of this place, Jimmy DeCastro, hosted the very exclusive Green Jacket Open on Saturday at the beautiful Merritt Club, where 16 of us gathered. To punch each other out for several hours in a tournament won by a former salesperson here.
Oh, I heard on the last hole, rumor had it.
Yeah, Brian Watercutt. Well, playoffs went sudden death. Yeah. Brian Watercutt. Hey, this is, you know, Jets beat the Colts Super Bowl III, right?
Yeah.
We beat the Commies in Lake Placid 1980.
Mm-hmm.
This is also one of the greatest upsets in sports that Watercutt won. It's Larry Wirt, my partner. And by the way, Larry and I had a lovely afternoon. I think we'll see each other again. As Larry Wirt said to Watercutt, you really used to suck, which made it all the more impressive that he won. So good for him. Of course, it does indicate to all bosses listening, when somebody you know plays golf at a higher level, they're probably not working. They're probably playing too much golf. But congratulations to God. Thanks to Jimmy DeCastro, a fine host.
Yeah. How do you get invited to that?
Ah, you got to know people.
Yeah, I guess.
You got to know people.
Because I saw, like, some other former employees. I saw the team photo, and there were some other former employees of this place.
Who else is there? Who am I thinking of?
One of a former sports guy here.
Oh, Kaplan.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kaplan's there. By the way, David Kaplan, who left with three holes to go.
Well, I think he had to work.
Whatever! This is the Green Jacket Open. And don't you have 16-inch softball playoffs tonight?
Tonight it is. Yeah, I'm rested and stretched, limbered.
Yeah,
it's the best thing to do. It's to wipe the taste of this Bears game out the mouth.
So no need to worry about you. You ready to go?
I'm ready to go.
At your age, because you're elderly.
Good. I feel good. We got the Chicago Tribune tonight, so we beat them earlier in the season, so they might be out for blood.
I'm going to guess that John Cass is not on that team.
No, he does not play on that team.
Do you have a lot of smack talk? Oh, sorry, Dave.
None right now, but there will be tonight.
Mm. I said to Justin, the way this weekend has gone for Chicago sports, going back to Friday.
Yeah, with Kopech.
All the way through. And
this would not be
not the night to play softball.
Yeah.
Or we turn it around. Or we consider this to be the next week. You know, the beginning of the next week, and we turn it around.
Now, next week started last night. Yeah. And one other thing, and I'm sure Dave will talk about this throughout the morning as well, but the BMW Championship, which is so rooted in Chicago, former Western Open, I guess you could call it, may not be finished. What do we know about the weather?
Well, it may be
today?
Finished. I mean, that's the thing. It's they may not be able to finish it today. They're going to
like 5 inches of rain in Philly this week.
Well, I mean, look at Washington.
Yeah.
I mean, the Cubs actually spent more time waiting out rain delays than they did playing baseball over the weekend. But they're going to try to play today. If the course is not playable, then Justin Rose will be declared the winner. And he'll also be number one in the world.
I don't understand why they can't just wait, because the Tour Championship is 2 weeks away, and there's nothing in between. Why can't they just make the guys stay in Philly for a couple of
days? These guys have things to do.
Oh, okay.
They got to shop for new pants.
6:31, and your headlines in a moment at 720 WGN.
Doctor.
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 And doctor. Well, we miss anyone?
He's Northwestern Medicine VP. Call Dr. Morse right now.
Dr. Kevin Most is, as always, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. The pursuit of better health care starts here. It was one of those, let's see, AFK M's. One of those AFK, no, AYFKMs. That's what it was. You can figure out the acronym later. Because I woke up this morning, it was 23 when I went to bed, Doc, and I woke up this morning and suddenly it's 24-23 Green Bay.
Yeah, how about it?
That's a bit of a shock to the system when you wake up and you think it's a win in the bag.
It's amazing how we all felt so great for those first couple minutes. I mean, defense played well, Trubisky played well, and then if you went to sleep at halftime, well, sorry, sports fans.
Is there a remedy for this hangover, this sports hangover we have this morning?
Don't choke.
Yeah, it's called
weekend.
The new fall lineup.
Ah. All right, let's talk about kids going back to school, because they're healthy over the summer, you think, and then they go back to school and they get around all their infested friends and they bring home who knows what. I mean, what are we doing about this, Doc?
Yeah, you know, you said it right. You know, we have them all summer. They're close to us. They're close to our house. We watch over them, and now all of a sudden we're pushing them back. And whether they're going to grade school, to middle school, to high school, to college, you're putting them in environments now where it was different than the summer. And we just have some things that we probably should kind of look out for. Something for small kids as simple as how much does their backpack weigh, all the way up to college kids saying, are we watching them a little bit more closely with mental health issues because now they're out of the house?
Yeah, and also you've got meningitis issues at college, more so than high school, right? What is that about?
Yeah. So, you know, when we put kids into a closer, tighter environment, and in college that happens, right? You know, in high school you're with your friends for a little bit and then you're not with them. But in college, you know, you're hanging out in dorms or frats or wherever, and you're all in a tight environment. And unfortunately, there's meningitis that can spread fairly easily and fairly quickly through college settings. Look at some of the infectious disease outbreaks we've seen in the past. We hadn't heard about whooping cough for a whole long time, and then University of Iowa, that's got to be going on probably 10 years ago, had that large outbreak of whooping cough, and all of a sudden, okay, time to get boosters for whooping cough. So, you know, we just want to make sure that if your kids are going back, make sure that they have all the immunizations up to date. Make sure they have their meningitis vaccine up to date. Make sure they have whooping cough. And believe it or not, we're coming into flu season. You're going to have to get on your kid to either go to student health, make sure they get the flu shot if they're in college, and then make sure you follow up with your pediatrician or family doc for, you know, the students that are still living in your home.
We're only about 8 weeks from Dr. Most coming in here and poking us all.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. The other college concern that you mentioned, and this is a big one, is the mental health side of things. The stresses and pressures of, you know, performing as an adult for the first time without having your parents hovering over you. It's a big deal. So what sort of things do parents need to watch out for when the kids come home?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting. You know, when you're in high school, you think about your senior year of high school, and it's kind of like you're on cruise control. And now you're thrown into this environment where, whoa, it's a lot more stressful. High school was essentially quote-unquote free. Now we know how much college is costing, and the stress to continue to have good grades, anxiety around school. You're going to an environment now, new friends. You're responsible. You've never been responsible in the past, and now you're responsible. So So parents, really, especially for these first couple months, I always encourage people not only text and talk to your kid, but FaceTime them. You can see more in a facial expression and kind of get a good look at what's going on with the child, because you want to make sure that, they're doing okay being taken from a very comfortable home setting and thrown into the stressful setting of college.
Dr. Mo, stress, of course, we hear this a lot with college kids about all the things that you just said, but as you go down a list and or even get younger, when you think about high school and even grade school, where homework starts to pile up or expectations become more in the sense that, you know, you got to get better grades to get into, in Chicago, a better high school and a high school into college. What can we do about the stress mounting when the kids are younger?
Yeah, and you make a very good point. You think about the stress right now of grades. You want to get into a good school. Boy, your parents are pushing on you for that. You also have this impact of social media now and how mean kids can be. So really looking out for those things and trying to be supportive if they can. And I'll tell parents, try to get to be friends with their friends, because sometimes your child won't say anything, but they may tell their good buddy. And then that good buddy can share sometimes with you. So really, it's important to kind of, especially as we're looking at kids in grade school and in high school, the stress and anxiety that's there, what are they starting to do? Did you see a change in their sleeping pattern? Are they normally really good sleepers and now they don't? Or were they normally up early in the morning and then they would sleep all day now? You know, have they changed how their eating pattern? Do they kind of look like they're having feelings of sadness? Are they stopping to do things that they used to really like? I don't want to go to the football game this Friday. You know, it just doesn't any fun anymore. Those are the ones that we need to be concerned about and watch over those a little bit closer.
You know, one thing we struggle with, Doc, is I know this doesn't apply to everybody listening, but like our kids, and I know like Steve will say this about his kids, they had a way more comfortable lifestyle than we had when we were younger. And so the only thing our kids all have to deal with is just being a kid going to school in their activities. They don't have any real life scenarios. They're not driving home because somebody's too drunk or, you know, and so I almost think what they think is anxiety, it's like, well, you should have seen what it's like when you've got maybe a hole getting punched in the wall at home or something. You know, like we've made it to their anxiety.
It's a fair point. Is it too fluffy? Is it too fluffy now, Doc, or is it all relative?
Well, you know, I think it's all relative, to be honest with you, especially for mental health issues, because some of these smaller things can trigger kids. But you do make a very good point, and you say we had it a lot harder. I'll tell you, it used to be easier to come home after school and go play baseball in the street with all your neighborhood kids than it is to get home. All right, put your uniform on quickly. We have to drive you, you know, three towns away to a soccer league. So the stress that we're putting on kids, whether they're going to get used to it and grow into it, is kind of something that scares me. I think a lot of kids miss out on a lot of things because of the stress that parents put on them for school, the stress that parents put on them for sports activities. So let kids be kids sometimes, and I think it might help their health.
Another area that you mentioned as well in some of the prep that'll be up at WGNRadio.com, the learning disabilities, ADHD, ADD, as we know, and how do you recognize the disabilities? And if you're concerned about your kid, have a game plan to tackle something like that?
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting. A study just came out of the University of Iowa on ADHD. We used to think that the rate of ADHD was around 5%, and it's not a new disease. We can all think back of kids in our classes that probably had ADHD and were never diagnosed. But now we're starting to look at it and say we're diagnosing it. Now we're up, instead of 5-6%, we're going over 10%. But these are the kids that, you know, they're not paying good attention. They make careless, stupid mistakes at school or even with other activities. They'll make they'll just do something like, why would you have done that? Very difficult to sustaining attention, whether it's in the classroom or at home. They often won't look at you, and they'll almost not be listening to you when you're supposed to. They don't follow through on things. They're very active. They avoid, they're not going to do tasks that take a lot of mental effort. They're not going to sit there and study for a long time. They lose things. They're easily distracted. So those are the kids that we need to be careful about, because it's going to impact not only their school life, but also their social life.
I will come back with more with Dr. Most in just a second and talk a little bit about keeping your kid healthy and keeping your family healthy when your kid comes home. Back with Dr. Kevin Most, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, the pursuit of better health care. Starts here. We're talking about kids, keeping your kids healthy, keeping your family healthy. Doc, we talk all the time about fixing bullying, and that's an ongoing problem. We can't fix it. But I will always say to parents, don't assume your kid's a good guy or a good girl. You know, check that out as well. You could be completely bamboozled. Make sure your kids are doing the right thing at school. And by the way, that includes being responsible enough to report other kids when they're being jerks.
That's huge, Steve, right now with social media, is that there's two sides of the story, and we really do need to have more awareness of it, because it's sad when you start to hear about a suicide of an adolescent or a suicide of a high school student, and when they really start to look, it's because of the abuse that they may have received on social media, or really just the abuse that they receive in the school, in the classroom. So it's something that we do need to watch, and as parents, try to be cognizant of it.
And peer pressure is tough, too, because, right, you come home...
Peer pressure is huge, especially at those ages where they're starting to find out who they actually are, and they try to be... They want to be with the cool kids. They want to look the right way, and it's very difficult.
You come home from work after a long day with legitimate grown-up problems, and your kid's complaining about something which you know as an adult is no big deal, but you need to go back to what it felt like when you were that age and either help them figure out that they can deal with it or at least be sympathetic to the fact that it's a big deal to them in the moment.
Yep.
Well, and their awareness of what they're being missed out on is much greater now because of the access with social media. If you weren't invited to a party when I was little, there's a chance you may never even knew that party didn't happen, you know, because if you didn't hear about it, no one told you, you didn't see a picture on Snapchat or everyone having the best time ever without you, you know.
We're going to run out of time. We're sleeping. Talk to me about sleeping, because none of us sleep enough as adults. Are kids getting enough sleep?
Kids really, for the most part, aren't getting enough sleep. You know, they're having to study later in the evening, and they're getting up a lot earlier. So kids really do need that rest. And the other bad thing, and I mean, I hate to say it, kids are going to be really mad at me, is take those cell phones away when they go to sleep, because studies have shown that kids will be on their cell phone, whether they're texting or surfing the web or doing whatever on their phone, later into the evening when you go to sleep. Before, for us, no one had TVs in their bedroom. No, we didn't have cell phones. When you went to sleep, you went to sleep. Now we're starting to see all of these things that are impacting on that sleep pattern, which takes off their energy the next day, makes them more difficult to study. And I do want to say one other thing, because I know we're going to run out of time, but Justin was talking about ADHD. You know, ADHD, it's kind of an unusual illness, right? We treat that illness with a stimulant, and you're like, wait a second, you just told me that this kid is already stimulated and you treat him with a stimulant. And it is, and it's just kind of weird how the science works, but the medications like Ritalin or Adderall or Concerta, those are the medications that we're using. The bad thing about it is they're also very highly abused. So we start to see, you know, some of the studies show that huge percentage of college students who actually are on this medication legitimately, people are coming to them and say, hey, I want to buy some of those from you. I want to buy some of those because they know it's called a study drug, and it kind of helps them concentrate for a period of time before a test. So be really careful about your kid. Make sure that they know that people are going to ask them about it. Make sure they know how important that medication is for them and that they can actually go to jail for selling it. So, I mean, some of those peer pressures there can come from the parent as well.
Yeah, and don't be your kid's best friend. I'm not saying that negatively. I'm saying it positively. Your job is to be the parent, not to be your kid's best friend. So set some rules in your home and be consistent with them.
Absolutely. And you said it really well. Sometimes parents do want to be their best friend, but they also need to have grooming for you to how should I act and what should I do and how do I deal with stress and how do I... Those are the things that you're going to have to be as a parent instead of just trying to be their best friend.
That's really easy, as we've laid out here. There's no issues.
Yeah. Oh, it's simple. Yeah.
Great set of notes here, Doc, as always, and podcast goes up, and so do Doc's notes. Read them and learn more about the stuff we talked to and the stuff we didn't get to. Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, the pursuit of better health care starts here. Thank you, my friend.
You got it, man. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Coming up, Stories That Matter with Steve Grzanich from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio.
Rogers, surveying, fires, that's cool. Randall Cobb inside the 20-yard line.
Trubisky, look out, loses the ball on a fourth down play. Nick Perry. And the first Green Bay is going to win.
Everybody hurts.
Sometimes. 20-3 when I roll over and go to sleep.
That was the problem.
Wake up this morning, 24-23. Dan Hampton, sponsored by Chevy, drivechicago.com. Don't miss a minute of Hamp and OB and Cause and the pre and the post, because it's the best thing on the radio. Best thing on football, period, in this town. Matter of fact, I put it up against anybody. So, Hamp, here's the overriding question to me this morning. Was the fourth quarter a failure by the offense or a failure by the defense?
Well, first of all, I've got to tell you, unfortunately, if you were asleep, you missed some pretty good stuff last night. You know, Ed Obradovich, the great OB, has watched the Chicago Bears and played for the Chicago Bears for a long, long time. He said it was the most devastating loss he can remember because of the time and place and how it all started to go south early in the third quarter. But if you want to, you know, everybody was complicit. There's nobody can hide in this one. And I hate to say it, but if you listen to the pregame, we basically outlined what was entirely possible because of the arrogance of the new regime and their refusal to prepare themselves. And I think it's, you know, it's everybody, you know, eat your vegetables, go to sleep, brush your teeth. Every day you got to tell your kids, do these things. And there's a reason why you have to do it, because if you don't, you're going to be unprepared. Things are not going to work out all the time. It's not always going to just happen because, we're really smart and, you know, we can line up an offensive left tackle out at wide receiver and befuddle the great Green Bay Packers, and we're going to trick these guys and, you know, do all this motion. It just doesn't work. And the big losers in the whole thing, you got to think that Ryan Pace today is shaking his head saying, what happened? You know, some games are gut punches. This was a car wreck because you had the Green Bay Packers down.
You had it won.
20 to nothing. And Aaron Rodgers was on one leg, limping, left the game on a golf cart. And yet you find a way to allow them to come back and win. And, you know, I'm getting sick of this. Every time you get Packers, you know, it's Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. You know, they're constructing, they've torn up the plans for the Aaron Rodgers statue today and doubling the size of it after what he did last night. It's just incomprehensible. But Ryan Pace is the guy that selected Matt Nagy, and we're all like, okay, this is, you know, the guy seems like he knows what he's doing. Well, it was another colossal collapse in the second half, just like the last time we saw him in the playoffs before the Bears hired him, where he blew a 21-3 lead in the second half to lose to the Titans. But more than that, you start looking at the players, his number one draft picks. Think about this. Mitch Trubisky, everybody said, oh, he's so smart. He's taken 2,000 snaps in practice. He doesn't need to do preseason. We don't need that stuff. We don't do that kind of stuff. Hey, that's for the losers. They practice. They have to play in preseason games. We're too smart. Well, guess what? Mitchell Trubisky is a one-read quarterback that could not figure out what to do with the football, especially after the first read was covered. Now, the defense of the Packers was very suspect early. They were playing some soft zones. He was able to make some throws. Allen Robinson came up with a nice catch. And they go down the field, and they score a touchdown on a quarterback keeper from the 4-yard line. Now, that was the only touchdown of the game. That was on the first drive. From then on, they started clamping down on the receivers, jamming them, making him come off of the primary and go to the – he couldn't do it. And you know why? Because that is why you play preseason games. So quarterbacks, receivers can learn how to make adjustments. Number two, Leonard Floyd. He's got the bad hand. He was a non-factor. Kevin White, nobody saw it. thank God for Khalil Mack. And I told you last week, he's the best thing the Bears have done in 20 years. It may be 50 years now, because that guy kept us in the game. Think about this. Not only did he score a touchdown, but he stopped at least a field goal, if not a touchdown, when the Packers, with Kaiser, drove it right down the field.
He was a one-man wrecking crew, without a doubt. Dave, say hi to him.
Okay.
And Hemp, okay, how about having him on kickoff returns, too? Because he runs pretty well with the ball. We found out last night.
But here's the other thing. You know, Vic Fangio didn't play a bunch of his starters, Trevathan and Akeem Hicks, and they all played pretty well early, the first third of the game. But you know what? Bear Bryant said it 50 years ago. Fatigue makes cowards of everyone. And you know what? We could not get a pass rush after, you know, after the halftime. And at some point, you got to either decide, hey, everybody was tired. You know, our two corners who got new high-dollar deals in the offseason, you know, Fuller makes that interception, and we're laughing today. But instead, you know, he doesn't have a good game. He gives up the bomb and drops a pick that would have, you know, iced it. Amukamara was exhausted and was stumble-bombed. Could not even get lined up. You know, when the Green Bay Packers are on the 12-yard line going in and he's got an 8-yard cushion, you know what he's telling you? I'm exhausted. Throw it on. And the Packers are smart. And you know what? We played right into their hands by being unprepared. And guess what? It came back in this.
Hey, how much of that lack of pass rush in the second half was just simply Rodgers getting the ball out of his hand quicker than he did in the first half? How much of it was fatigue?
Okay. When he first came back, I said in the room, okay, he's going to go to the 3-5-step rhythm, 2 seconds, get it out, blah, blah, blah. Well, we're not smart enough to realize that's what he's going to do. He can't move. He can't get out of the pocket. He can't, you know, afford another shot. So they're going to get the ball out quick. What do we need to do? We need to get up, jam, take the inside away, make him throw the hard throws, you know, make him pat the ball, take it down, and wait. But we don't do that. We allow them to go to the quick rhythm because we're tired. We back off and allow them just to play pitch and catch all the way down the field. And I got to tell you, Nick Kwiatkowski, I'd love to have this kid as a neighbor, but I'm telling you, he's a liability. Go back and look at Rodgers. The entire third quarter, he looked, when he put people in motion, he looked at the coverage, realized who Kwiatkowski would have, threw it at them because he was useless in coverage. And, right. You know, these are things that you have to find out in preseason. And we're too smart to worry about that.
Well, stand by.
We want to go on the road with this show and show how we can blow up in the second half.
Stand by. The Kwiatkowskis are coming over, and they want to borrow some sugar because they're good neighbors. More with Hamp in just a second, and we'll do the most valuable person on the planet. I'm going to give you a hint on who it is. It's that guy. It's Hamp. Stand by. We'll come back. And more on the Bears, who played 48 minutes last night and unfortunately took the last 12 minutes off.
Third and 19. And this time, he's going to go down. It's going to be picked off by Mack. Mack with the interception. And Mack will take it all the way in for a touchdown. How crazy was that? Robertson Harris extracted the ball, 28 yards, and Khalil Mack is already the defensive MVP of the season.
Can I tell you, Al Michaels, who's 109 now, Dave, I don't think he's ever been better.
No, he's terrific.
He's just tremendous.
Well, except when he said, do you believe in miracles?
I mean, you didn't like that one?
That was a pretty good line.
No, it wasn't bad. Dan Hampton rejoins us now. You only get 16 of these. This is why they matter. It's not 162 chances. Justin, say hi to him.
To Hamp, you have played, obviously, a Hall of Fame career, and you've been a part of devastating losses. How does a team respond to this loss so early in the season, one that, is unthinkable? But how do you get ready for the next week?
Oh, we just lost him.
Oh, no.
Let's see if we can get him back.
That was probably a rage hang-up.
His head blew up.
But that's I would make the argument that the passion doesn't exist with the modern athlete the way it did even 10 years ago.
Yeah.
In other words, the modern athlete moves on way quicker than the fan does. And it was true 10 years ago. Generationally, I think the Bears team of the Super Bowl era, the 80s, They lived with this.
I'm worried
they
about
This was ulcers.
I'm worried about Mitchell Trubisky because the other guys, meh, I don't care. But Mitchell Trubisky, they showed a lot of weakness last night. He does not look like he, like Hamp said so eloquently, he's not picking up the NFL offense. He's not doing second reads. So the question I have is, what is the impact and what do you have to worry about with Mitch Trubisky moving forward in a week?
We'll talk a little bit more about that on Friday, but. You know, here's the one thing. They're telling you something by not playing in the preseason. Something is a screw. And you got to think to yourself, why would we not want to go out and finish this team off? We basically went out there and in a weak and timid way tried to continue with the trickery and the RPOs. Jordan Howard averaged well over 5 yards a carry. We could run the ball. And yet on 3rd and 1, time after time, we line up and do some idiotic, roll right throwback to a 300-pound tight end that's not even over the line of scrimmage. So here's the thing. You know, there's something that just doesn't make sense to me. And a football team, when Matt Nagy gets up there today to address the team, after the team's watched the film and seen what happened and who's who and who was tired and who was taking plays off, you got to understand the coach is responsible for the overarching attitude of the team and how the team has to go out and try to win a game. And we refuse to try to win the game. And at some point, you got to say, you got to have nerve. Well, we didn't have any nerve in the second half. It was like we were innocent bystanders waiting for someone to slap us. And we stood there and let Aaron Rodgers come back out and slap us silly and win the game. And, you know, nerve is very important. You don't know, it's like air. You don't know it's there, but you can't quantify it, but you know when it's there. Well, we didn't have any nerve. We were very lucky to be up. And yet, we refuse to go out and try to finish this team off. And that tells me there's something going on with the quarterback. They don't want to expose him and put him in situations for him to fail. And yet, here we are with the offense scoring, 3 field goals, essentially, after the opening drive.
We are listening to Dan Hampton, the most valuable person on the planet. Congratulations, Hamp. That's quite an award for you.
Thank you.
We're going to run out of time here quickly, Justin.
I'm glad I was my glib, insecure personality was recognized.
Sure, yeah.
Walk Bears fans off the cliff here. You've been a player.
Justin, you're really saying
you mean walk
me
back.
Off.
Walk me back.
Why should I believe, not off the cliff.
Why should I believe in this Chicago Bears team?
Well, they got to do some things. First of all, hey, let's get in shape. We didn't want to pay the price the last 2 months. Let's try to get in shape so we can play in the 3rd and 4th quarter. And that means everybody, receivers, everyone. Number two, just like the drunk uncle at Christmas, take the bottle away from him. Take the play chart away from Nagy. The second half, he doesn't have whatever it takes to go out and call an aggressive game plan. Two times in a row now, you have been ahead, and we refuse to go out and close the deal. We've got to be better in the second half on adjustments and play calling. It was ridiculous. And number three, you got to make some personnel changes. Roquan Smith needs to start, and the sooner the better. And on offense, Cody White here. On the last drive where we came up with a field goal, where a touchdown would have won the game, but we had to settle for a field goal because Cody White here, they keep persisting on playing in the center, and yet when it gets down to the nut cutting and the crunch time, the high snaps put us in a position where we had to go back under center with the quarterback on 3rd down. Which basically eliminates 80% of the offense, and it was an easy, an easy play to defend for the Packers. They got to move him to left guard and put the second round draft pick, James Daniels, in at center. And if they would have done this 3 weeks ago, you got to start eliminating problems
right,
that keep you from winning. These are things they have to do before next Monday night.
Timing and reps only come from preseason. More reps, more timing, the more times you get together and do it. It's not rocket science when it comes to that. And one extra first down, or putting Aaron Rodgers on his backside after he came back in the game once, changes that game. changes the game. It's a different conversation. It's all sponsored by ChevyDriveChicago.com. Say hi to the neighbors. Where are they? Who's living next to half the Kwiatkowskis?
Kwiatkowskis.
Yeah.
Kwiatkowskis are back. Nick and his
They're coming over for Monday Night Football. This should be fun.
All right, buddy. Thank you.
Thanks, Sam.
Go Bears!
Sponsored by ChevyDriveChicago.com, and we didn't even get a chance to congratulate you, Dave. I believe you had the correct score.
I had the correct margin. Unfortunately, I wish I did not. You had the correct score. You just had it reversed.
I had a 24-23.
I had the Packers winning 21-20. I just, I was so hoping I was wrong. I mean, I'm partially hoping I'm wrong.
How about the fact that OB has been around Bears football for almost 60 years, and this could be the most painful loss ever?
And that says a lot. Last year at Lambeau, Mike Glennon gave up the game at halftime.
Early
they were down 30 points or something. It was so embarrassing to come. Which is worse, that or what happened last night?
How about this? Couple of notes. Second largest comeback for the Packers in team history at Lambeau Field, and the first time in Packers history that they won after trailing by 17-plus points going into the fourth quarter.
There was a great stat from NBC that was right in early in the third quarter when the game was still in hand. The last time the Bears led the Packers by 17, President Truman was in office. It was 1948. Last time they led by 17 at the half. It's 7:33. Back with the headlines in a moment. 7:20 WGN.
The book is a work of fiction. If you look back at Woodward's past, he had the same problem with other presidents. He likes to get publicity, sell some books.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Well, that's my friend Ryan Nobles. Just now, just seconds ago, Ryan Nobles from CNN was disconnected from the lie detector at the White House. And as it turns out, it's not him. It's not you. Congratulations.
I can say declaratively I did not write the op-ed.
The idea that the Vice President of the United States yesterday said, yep, strap me up. If that's not enough to tell you we live in a crazy town, as quoted in the Woodward book, I don't know what you need. I don't know what else you need. This is not normal. For the vice president to say, hey, anybody got a lie detector? Hook me up.
I completely agree, Steve. I think that was perhaps the most stunning quote from the weekend. You know, you can say what you want about the Woodward book. You can believe or not believe his reporting. You can argue that the president's being unfairly attacked, but you cannot deny the fact that this is just, as the White House, in a tizzy right now. I mean, I don't think it's ever happened that a sitting vice president of the United States has had to volunteer himself for a lie detector test just so everyone knows that he's faithful to the president of the United States. These are certainly strange times, and it makes you wonder how they can accomplish the business of the United States government when they have all this controversy swirling around.
Yeah, and the problem is, as the vice president, he should be taking the leadership role to say there is no need for a lie detector, Chuck Todd, or whoever, because this organization is so well run, we all have faith in each other. Because if the vice president takes a lie detector, then what reason would there be for anybody under him not to? He creates a bigger problem.
There's no doubt about that. And then the other thing I think it shows is that Mike Pence is not necessarily in the inner circle. He's much like cabinet secretaries and lower-level deputies who just feel that they need to constantly be in the good graces of Donald Trump. It seems as though the president doesn't view him as a peer, but more as an underling. And Pence has definitely been walking this kind of narrow tightrope for some time where he's tried to carve out his own political niche, but doing so without angering Donald Trump. So it seems as though what you saw happen here with this op-ed was that, which is what I think happens a lot with the Trump administration, is that all of these guys ducked for cover. And, you know, it's like they all get in a room and play that game where they touch their nose first, and whoever is the last person to touch their nose is the person responsible for writing the op-ed. You know, nobody's actually trying to figure out exactly who wrote it. They just want to make sure the president thinks they aren't the one who wrote it, and even the vice president is among that group.
Second grade. It's just all second grade.
Ryan,
Justin.
Yeah, why is this resonating so much with the Trump White House? Because it's not the first time that people have written books or done tell-alls, or even people who have been part of the administration had leaked information. What is it about this op-ed that has Trump fuming and continuing the story into the next week?
Yeah, it's a great question, Justin. I think, you know, the point that you make is a great one, that there have been leaks out of this White House since day one, and even if this op-ed writer is discovered, it's not as though the leaks are going to stop. It's not like this person is the only source of those leaks. But I think the fashion in which this was displayed, the bold move by this person to write an op-ed, and of all places, the New York Times, where despite the president consistently calling it the failing New York Times, secretly worshiped and hopes for the adoration of the New York Times because he is a New Yorker first and foremost. So I think that, first of all, the way that it was released, I think, was a big part of it. But I also think that it buttresses the claims in the Woodward book in a very effective way. And I think that's what really rankles the president. It would be one thing if you had just the Woodward book and just the op-ed. Either one of those things unto itself, you could argue, this is nothing more than Washington politics. This is the swamp trying to destroy the president. But when you have two essentially independent voices telling the same exact story, it makes it much harder to rebut. And I think that's one of the reasons that the White House is so rankled. It's like you can't even begin the messaging to destroy Woodward's credibility when you have this other thing that you have to deal with.
Right.
It's really turned them in a loop.
There is something from the Woodward book, which is out today, that previously didn't come out, but it was a part of the Woodward interview train yesterday. He talked about the most dangerous tweet ever, and it was a tweet that wasn't sent. But it goes to show the lack of knowledge and the lack of interest in learning by the President of the United States. And the tweet was, he doesn't know why we have troops in South Korea. We're spending too much money. It's always money. And therefore, we're going to pull the families of the troops out of South Korea. Back-channel negotiations with North Korea indicated that Kim Jong-un and North Korean leadership would see this as a first step to war, and they would go immediately to their version of DEFCON 1. Somebody in the food chain shut it down. But this is where Woodward said, we got to wake up to how big a problem this guy is because of the lack of maturity and the lack of foresight into seeing what a problem he could have caused.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the broad theme of the Woodward book. There's been a lot of Republicans in particular that have argued that, you know, you can be unhappy with the president's demeanor and his style, and yes, he can be a bully and he tells it like it is, but at the end of the day, he still has the best interest of the country in mind. The economy is raging. Everything he said he's done, he's going to do. Quit complaining about his style. And what I think the Woodward book is a peek behind the curtain to show that he's right on the edge in numerous examples of either saying something without the necessary guidance or tweeting something or making some sort of move that could have lasting, serious consequences. And a lot of these people that are enabling the president need to be more aware of that situation. And that's, I think, the big question right now as this thing moves forward. And I also wonder how it impacts the backdrop of the Mueller investigation, because, you know, if Mueller comes out with a report that is damning but not necessarily conviction-type damning, when you couple it with all the other sorts of concerns that are out there about President Trump, does that then move the Congress in a direction where they're more willing to take that step? And I think that might be part of why the president's so upset about all of this. You know, he understands that, well, I don't know if he understands, but the people around him seem to understand that there's a broader problem here. It's not just about the allegations in the book. It's not just about the Mueller investigation. It's not just about the fact that he's losing political support. It's all these things combined together that could spell the end of his presidency, and that's why I think you see him so upset about this.
There's a scene that's painted about this South Korea-North Korea question where Mattis looks at Trump, who keeps asking, why do we have all these troops in South Korea? And Mattis says, so we can prevent World War III. He's saying that to the President of the United States. Listen, it's well beyond the stage of I can't believe I'm saying this, you can't make it up. All those cliches still apply. But the Woodward book is going to bring out more fear, which happens to be the title of the book, I think, than ever before. Let's see if Mitch McConnell loses that laryngitis that's been plaguing him all year and actually stands up and says something. Meanwhile, what are you covering today?
Well, I think the what I'm scheduled to be doing is heading out to Florida this week to cover the governor's race down there, which has become just crazy. We've had this insurgent candidate, Andrew Gillum, who's a Democrat but comes from the progressive wing of the party, endorsed by Bernie Sanders, kind of surprised everyone, running against a Trump-style Republican in Ron DeSantis. And I think it's really the first test of a swing state, which Florida is decidedly, and this idea that instead of trying to appeal to the center of the political spectrum, which is generally what you do in swing states, these two candidates seem to be really pushing up their base and taking the gamble that there will be more of their voters there in the general election. I think it's a really fascinating race, and I think it's got national implications because the way these two candidates run the race and whoever the victor is at the end of it, coupled with how we see the races in the midterms on the congressional level go, could really set the stage for how the 2020 election moves forward. So it could be fascinating. I say that all with the enormous caveat, though, that this enormous storm is bearing down on the East Coast, Steve, that could end up in waders somewhere in a body of water somewhere on the East Coast.
You got till Thursday.
Just as likely.
You got till Thursday. Get in and get out. And kids, it's all predicated on low voter turnout. So I'm going to slap on the lie detector here and just make sure I didn't write the op-ed because I'm forgetful. Maybe it was me. And thank you, Ryan Nobles.
Thank you, guys. Have a great week.
See you later.
720 WGN.
His mother told him someday you will be a man, and you will be the leader of a big old band. Many people coming from miles.
I spent some time yesterday collecting resources, if you will. We're going to, I guess, Sandberg, you tell me, but we're going to, I assume, build out a page at the Steve Cochran Show, part of WGNRadio.com, in regards to Making America Vote Again, where we can put all our stuff,
yes.
Interviews with people. Can they all live there? I don't know how this fancy internet thing works.
They can, yeah. They'll all be tagged with Make America Vote Again, and you'll be able to go to that page and...
So, for instance, if I do an interview with Mike Quigley... And I talked to Quigley about why he thinks he should be reelected. We could post it there?
Yes, we could post it there, yes.
If I write a blog.
And you could.
If I write an op-ed.
Yep, it'll be there. As is all of our content, which people should access at WGNRadio.com or the WGN Radio app, which is fabulous. So I would suggest that.
You can go to the Chicago Tribune's midterm elections coverage. We'll post that at the website. You can also do the same with the Chicago Sun-Times. In Wisconsin, WisconsinVote.org is a place to go. In Iowa, the Des Moines Register is a resource. In Indiana, the Indy Star, the Indianapolis newspaper, IndyStar.com. Michigan has something called MLive. MLive.com, which you can do politics there. You know, you can even find how to call your rep. There's a website called callyourrep.com or callyourrep.co, I believe is the actual. callyourrep.co, and it'll give you everything, all of it, including a template on what to say to your representative. But the two main websites I always recommend are Ballotpedia and VoteSmart, where you can do all the research you need to do. And there's research you need to do. Oh, no, look at this. Remember the angry lady that called a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, she was so mad.
She makes the coach look friendly.
All right.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, I was really good until you started talking.
Well, that's what I do. It's a talk show. I mean, otherwise you'd be awfully quiet in here.
Could you stop talking about Trump for just 5 minutes? Could you just stop talking about Trump for five minutes?
I just feel like we haven't talked about him much at all today. Maybe you just heard where we were.
Bears, right now it's...
He's not going away, okay? He's just not.
Okay.
So let's just put on our big boy pants, dry our eyes with those little tissues, and move on and talk about something wonderful and happy. Puppies and rainbows. That's what I want. And lollipops. Puppies and rainbows. Please, will you just stop talking about Trump?
Well, you heard? Did you hear he wants to put a lie detector on all of his people? I mean, come on. That's a little crazy, don't you think, there?
You know what? I don't care. I don't care what... I really don't.
Yeah, you just...
Okay? If somebody wants to talk nasty about you, let them talk nasty and move on.
So in other words, if I can't say something nice about Donald Trump, don't say anything at all?
That's right. you know how that, this is what it reminds me of, Steve? You know the dog that just continually barks?
Yeah, dog that keeps barking.
You don't know where the dog is coming from. You know, you think it's the neighbor, but it just barks and barks. Right. And everybody wants it to stop. You're the dog, Steve.
The dog in that
You're
analogy?
The dog.
I'm the dog.
You're the dog that won't stop barking. Please, someone put a muzzle on that dog. So I may call your boss today, Steve. Cockroach, I'm going to call your boss.
You're going to call my boss?
I'm going to tell him.
Oh, no.
Excuse me? What did you just say?
I said, oh, no. Oh, no.
Watch out.
Oh, no.
I think you should say, oh, no. I mean, I think you're laughing right now, but you're not going to be laughing when I get off the phone with your boss.
Would it help if I played a record? I know you like the music because you've called before. Would it help if I played a song?
I'll tell you what. I'm at the point right now, Steve Cochran. If you could just play Kenny G, I would feel better. And you know everybody can't stand that man's music, but I would much rather listen to Kenny G than listen to you rattle on about our president, who's not going anywhere, everybody. He's here. Move on.
All right, thank you. I appreciate your phone call.
I'm calling your boss.
All right,
bye-bye. Bye-bye.
You're like a caged beagle. Wow.
So in other words, if you hear a dog barking, I'm the dog.
Yeah.
The dog that won't shut up.
I kind of sometimes really agree with her.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
Steve, I don't want to scare you, but I think the last caller, called here asking for Todd Manley's direct number.
Oh, she did.
About 10 minutes ago.
Oh, no. I believe that'll be the first time I'll have to have a meeting with management ever.
Yeah. Coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Grzanich from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey, you know I love you more than what I should. Yeah,
Dean Richards is live at the Toronto Film Fest. How long does this thing go on? Is this like a 3-week deal? What's
for another
happening?
Week. Yeah, the film festival goes here for another week. It ends on the 18th, but this is North America's largest film festival. They actually shut down the streets here in downtown Toronto for this. That's how big this is. They set up, you know, booths and tents. It's like a gigantic, Taste of Chicago kind of thing. And people, are waiting in line to get into theaters to see movies. They're, waiting in line for world premiere. There's one world premiere after another. All the stars are here. Every A-lister is here that's got a new movie coming out. And I've been here since last Thursday. Talking to many of them about the very important issues of the day.
Well, talk about some of the people you've talked to. I know you had Matthew McConaughey yesterday. Who else?
We had Matthew McConaughey yesterday. He's got a new movie that's called White Boy Rick.
Yep.
That is the true story of a 16-year-old kid who becomes a major drug kingpin in Detroit by the age of 16. McConaughey doesn't play that role. It's a first-time actor whose name is escaping me right now. He has never been in a movie before, and this kid is amazing in this role. But McConaughey, I told him yesterday, and he burst out laughing. I said, you find new ways of creating creepy characters. You are the king of creepy characters, because none of them are the same that he does. So, yeah, we had McConaughey yesterday. We had Steve Carell and Timothy Chalamet, who was in that movie Call Me By Your Name last year. They're in this amazing movie about a teenage boy who is addicted to drugs.
What's all the movies about drugs and teenagers? What's going on?
It's a powerful movie about a father trying to save his son and get his son away from the drug scene.
Okay.
And Steve Carell again turns in a beautiful dramatic role. Timothy Chalamet is amazing. We had a great conversation with them. We're going to be talking with Susan Sarandon today. We talked with Regina King. She's in this powerful movie that's called The Hate U Give, about the Black Lives Matter movement. On the other end of the silly spectrum, Predator is coming out. Talked with the whole cast of Predator. The movie everyone was talking about, Steve, Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper, A Star is Born, a remake of this A Star is Born movie. It's going to win an Academy Award. The performances are amazing. Lady Gaga in her first major screen role is amazing. Bradley Cooper is amazing. And he directs the movie.
Is it true to the original and the remake? Because, I mean, the Barbra Streisand, Kris Kristofferson one was pretty great. Does it follow that same storyline?
Basically, it's a little more edgy than Barbra Streisand and Kris Kristofferson, and certainly way more edgy than the Judy Garland, James Mason version from 1954, and there was even one before that with Janet Gaynor, I think it was. I've never seen that version of it, but this one is very edgy and very contemporary, and, you know, Gaga sings her head off in this movie as the rising star who is discovered by this Bradley Cooper's character is an established rock star, but is also an alcoholic. And his life and career is on a decline, and the two fall in love, and it's, you know, the crossing of the paths of their professional careers, but also it's a story about unconditional love, the unconditional love of these two people, and another story about, you know, the perils of alcohol and substance abuse.
Sure.
That seems to be a little bit of a theme in some of the movies that are going to be coming out. These are the Oscar movies that come out at the Toronto Film Festival.
It's a great film festival. More with Dean in just a second. And I believe there's one you haven't talked about, which is, was that wrong? Because nobody told me that was wrong, starring Les Moonves. Is that in Toronto? Are they doing that one?
That was, it seemed so realistic to me.
Maybe it was a news story. I may have missed it.
I thought it was a documentary at first, but then suddenly the plot kept changing and money was being transacted. It's the most realistic movie that I've ever seen transacted on television.
All right, we come back. Let's hear wacky stories from Toronto, stuff you could only see when you're hanging around with the celebrities. Has nothing to do with the movies, nothing to do with promoting the movies. But we come back, Dean will tell us or make up stories about celebrities. All of this sponsored by Brand New Smile Dental Implant Center.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor.
Before I go back to Dean, we have an issue we need to discuss here. The closest bathroom to this studio is about 75 steps away, down one hallway and then down another. That's the only bathroom I'm aware of in the suite itself.
You are correct. That's the only one.
You can go out to public space.
But that's an additional 75 steps, probably 50 steps. 75 is probably more fair. And when you're on a time schedule, like say you're running out during a commercial break,
right,
you need the closest bathroom. So I want to institute a new rule. Unless you're going in and getting out, not going in and reading, not going in and spending quality time ignoring your job, you can't use that bathroom anymore.
Oh, I see.
Show bathroom.
I thought this was going to be a commercial read for a bedpan, Steve Cochran's bedpan that he puts next to the
studio. We're at least 6 months away from that.
Steve, I'm happy to let you use my motorized scooter that I use to get there fast. Because I also use that to go up to the sales office as well.
It's
or at least a manual, like a skateboard.
How about a zip line right down the hall?
Yeah, there we go.
I can make it fine.
You could land right on the toilet.
It's the principle of the thing. The principle of the thing is think about where you are.
Yeah.
Think about where you're working. You know, if you need to spend time, quality time thinking, go use the public restroom in the hallway.
I don't care for that bathroom, the one that's in the suite.
No, I'm not
because
using that
it
one.
Is like,
it's a guy's bathroom.
It's 12 by 12. It's a giant square with nothing in it but a toilet. It's very,
it's a handicap bathroom is what it's
also
supposed to be for.
I always feel like somebody's in the closet watching me, so I check the closets.
Yeah. Well, that seems to be rational.
Oh, yeah. There's a camera in there.
We could get a sign on the door. Because I know when we worked at
Steve Cochran only.
When Pete and I worked at CBS, the Steve Dahl Show offices were on the same floor as BBM AM, and the in-suite bathroom happened to be right next to our office, which Steve Dahl thought meant it was his bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
But all the news anchors Mm-hmm. It's the one close to the news desk.
I'm not saying
I've
it's
got some
my
about that bathroom, by the way, because I was one of the news anchors that had to share that bathroom.
Chris cried out and Steve Dahl going at it over the bathroom. You know,
there were some bombs left in that bathroom. I'm just going to say.
Okay. Here we're now we're getting right back to the point where I've got to come punch you.
All right.
It's been months now. I have to hit you. Here's the thing. I don't mind other people use it, but it should be a drive-through.
Right.
Get in, get out.
Yeah,
it's
you
not
shouldn't
a place
be
to
having to
stay.
Twiddle your thumbs outside the bathroom waiting for someone to come out.
These are the important topics.
Reading the full Sun Times, which I guess is about 10 minutes now. But.
I mean, the last time I had to use it, I had to go to Toronto. I ran into Dean.
Well, you know, thanks. I didn't have to go to the bathroom until this whole conversation.
608 textured. Can Dean tell Selma Hayek that she's been my hall pass for 20 years? She may not leave her billionaire French husband, but tell her.
That's gross.
Yeah, she is a beautiful woman. She actually was spotted on the red carpet yesterday. And despite me throwing myself over the security guards, tried to get even close to her. Apparently, the restraining order that I have from Chicago is also in effect here in another country
that
as well.
Right. Yeah, no, that seems right. All right, so give me a story about a celebrity that you saw, maybe a celebrity tiff going on, or celebrities, you know, just hanging out. You know, there's stuff in their face. Well, give me a celebrity story that we don't know.
Did not see any fighting going on. Everything's been pretty calm and sedate in that regard. I did interview a celebrity yesterday. He's in the movie Predator, who was barefoot. I thought that was a little unusual that he had neither shoes nor socks on. Not a huge celebrity, but it, you know, it was unusual. And when he becomes a big star, I'm going to throw that story around even more. Jake Gyllenhaal was stuffing his face like he was on death row when we were, you know, we were sitting down. He's in this movie that's called The Sisters Brothers with John C. Reilly and Joaquin Phoenix. Kind of a little bit of an irreverent Western, not really a comedy at all, but it's just a little bit of an irreverent take on a Western. But he's always a little loopy in the interviews, and you know, they bring food into the celebrities and, you know, cappuccinos and things. They're like constantly stuffing their faces to keep energy up, and I've never seen anyone chowing down as much as I did Jake Gyllenhaal. My favorite non-interview related story, and I posted pictures on my website, so some people may have already seen that we had a little meet and greet with Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper. And Bradley Cooper, you know, I've been interviewing him since he was a little baby Bradley Cooper, and you know, we talked about, you know, this amazing movie that he's in. And, you know, I said to him, can you imagine that the guy who may win for Best Director this year was in all three of the Hangover movies? You know, and he sort of found that kind of funny. Lady Gaga, you know, I've been a fan. I've seen her, I don't know, quite a few times when she's in Chicago. Maybe every time that she's been here, I'm a big fan. I told her how much, that, you know, I love her music, and I saw her with Tony Bennett. And, you know, how her music has a message and empowers people and makes her feel good. And she was getting a little, genuinely teary-eyed when, you know, I was telling her all this. She leans in, gives Uncle Dean a nice big hug, and then kisses my hand. Oh, I've never had a celebrity kiss my hand before.
Very nice.
So, yeah. So
you'll never wash that hand again.
Yeah, quite a long time. You know, celebrities making out with, maybe she just felt sorry for me. It's like, oh, look at the poor man.
No, I think it's because she loves you. It reminds me of the time I met Al Roker and he licked my forehead. It's not as good a story, but you know, I get it. I do. I get it. Well, we need you to come back. When are you coming back?
She's the real deal. I'm coming back today. I have one more set of interviews to do today with Susan Sarandon and Matt Bomer. They're in a movie about a woman whose son is kidnapped in Afghanistan, and she's working with proper authorities to try to get them out. That's going nowhere. So she kind of takes matters into her own hands to, you know, try to get her son out. So there's a lot of serious. I have to say that the Oscar movies, not exactly a barrel of laughs this year. There's
a lot of trauma.
There's a lot of very powerful and really well done movies. But there are some pretty serious, you know, slash depressing movies that are going to be coming out at Christmas time. Steve, you were talking about the movie starring Les Moonves. Did that really happen? I've just heard that they have just announced a sequel to that movie that stars Aaron Rodgers and Butch Trubisky. Did that really happen?
Yeah, exactly right.
Shot in Green Bay. They're going to shoot it in Green Bay, and apparently they're thinking that's going to be a big hit for some.
Aaron Rodgers did his Glenn Close Fatal Attraction. Just when he thought he was dead in the bathtub, he sat up with a knife and threw three touchdown passes.
Exactly right.
Oh, boy. All right. Thank you, man.
I'll see you tomorrow.
Sponsored by Brand New Smile. A brand new smile is in your future. And thank you, Dean. Deborah Norville will come up and join us here in a little bit. Well, she's not actually in studio. She might be using the bathroom down the hall. She won't be able to make it in. And it's Super Joe Trivia Monday, so we have some White Sox tickets for you coming up, too, on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
My friend Deborah Norville in just a second from Inside Edition. A bunch of people are texting saying, Steve, why didn't you ask Dean about the Billy Joel thing where he dressed up like Billy Joel and did a bit for Pat Tomasulo's show? Remind me tomorrow, because I'll forget. Remind me tomorrow and I'll bring it up to him.
Okay.
Coming up on Inside Edition, Mayhem in the Streets, Hot Rods running up and down your block. That's today. On Wednesday, the untold story of Meghan Markle's family. There's more than you've heard. And then high school reunion surgery this week, where people get, you know, a nip and a tuck just so they can feel better about themselves. But, you know, Deborah, I mean, you can't avoid the news of the day. And that's Les Moonves.
Oh, yeah. Big story.
And you're a woman that's been victimized by this and had to deal with it.
No connection to Les Moonves.
No.
Very clear.
Over the course of your career, you have had to fight off inappropriate advances. How's that? Is that a better way of putting it?
That's a better way of putting it. Yeah, I just don't want anybody to think in any way that, because I work for CBS, Les is my boss. And so this is obviously a very challenging day for a lot of people at the company.
He's a brilliant guy who has done a brilliant job with CBS, but now he has to fight for his reputation. And the backstory here is that there's a family fight going on. Sumner Redstone's, is it his daughter or his widow that Les has been tangling with?
It is Sherry Redstone, who is the daughter of Sumner Redstone. She is the vice chairman of the CBS Corporation.
And it does seem like that's the clash of the titans there. So it's hard to say where this is going to go, but, I mean, this could go on for a while, right?
Well, I couldn't tell you. Couldn't comment on that, but the news is that Mr. Moonves has resigned. He maintains that the stories that have been reported about him, including the six additional women whose stories were reported yesterday by Ronan Farrow in the New Yorker magazine, he says the stories are false. That's not the person who he is. Nonetheless, he is leaving CBS. As far as whether there will be any kind of severance payment, the board of CBS has said that will be a decision that's made after the completion of two separate investigations being conducted by white shoe law firms. And whatever settlement there is, $20 million of that will be in the form of a payment made to organizations that work in support of the Me Too movement. And they say that money would be coming directly from Mr. Moonves's severance package. So a lot of questions remain. What will the end of all of this be? But suffice it to say, he's the most high-profile individual to date caught up in the Me Too movement.
In the 1 minute we have, talk to me about this high school reunion surgery story. And I'm not laughing at it. I'm just amazed people are doing it.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I mean, I liked the people that I went to high school with, but I didn't feel the need to impress them so much that I would have plastic surgery. Right. But that's not the reason this woman is doing this. She is going back to her 39th high school reunion, and she's had a lot of challenges in her life. Her husband dropped dead of a heart attack 13 years ago, leaving her to raise three kids by herself, which she successfully did. They've all gotten into college. Along the way, she was diagnosed with cancer and is a survivor of colon cancer. So she's been dealt some pretty tough cards over the years, and she didn't want to be one of those people that, if you've gone to a reunion and when I went, they helpfully had the pictures of what we looked like in high school on our name tags, mm-hmm. so you could remember who this person was, because a lot of people don't look like they looked right. when they were 18 years old. So she didn't want to be one of those people. So she teamed up with a physician, and he recommended doing basically a facelift, and Inside Edition was invited to go along for the ride. And if you like detail, I have not seen the story because it airs on Friday, but I've read the script. It's like hook, line, and sinker. We are telling you everything they do to this lady. It may be shortened because this looks like a lot of detail to me, and I can tell you I will not see any of it, because when these stories air on the show, I turn my back to the monitor, I have my hands over my eyes, and I try to make noises so I don't hear like the hammer against the nose. I'm not good with this stuff.
I get it.
Still, not for me.
Still killing it. Deborah Norville, Inside Edition. Have a great show.
Always fun to be with you, Steve. Thanks for having me.
There you go. That's Deborah Norville. And you're going to hear more and more about this Les Moonves story, because that's what we do now. Show business, you get all of it. And this is the, unless I'm missing somebody, this is the richest, highest profile, most powerful guy in show business so far.
Yeah.
In this Me Too movement.
It's time for Super Joe's White Sox trivia question.
White Sox tickets for you. Let's go live to Super Joe, lifetime White Sox fan.
Answer Super Joe's White Sox trivia question correctly, and you can win White Sox tickets.
So, anyway, here's Super Joe.
I think Joe's in the production studio with Ernie. He's like, no, I think a nut more. Can you do more?
One of these times, it's going to come back and get me again.
He gets very upset, too, when you don't let the whole intro play out.
All right, Super Joe, what do you got?
Yeah, I'm steaming mad right now. Two players in the history of Major League Baseball have hit 20-plus home runs and had three-plus pitching appearances in the same season. Babe Ruth was one. Who was the other?
First correct answer, 312-981-7200. Dave, you cannot play.
Okay.
312-981-7200.
I think it's Freddie Garcia.
You can't play either. 312-981-7200.
It was not Sweaty Freddy.
That was good to guess, though.
Tomorrow is the 17th anniversary of 9/11, and there is a new tower that has been erected on the site of Flight 93's crash in that huge memorial outside of Shanksville, Pennsylvania. It's a concrete and steel structure 93 feet into the air. And it is not yet complete, but the Tower of Voices features a wind chime for each person on board with its own distinctive sound. Those that died, 40 airline passengers who fought to keep that plane from doing the damage it was intended to do, and it was in all likelihood headed for the Capitol Dome. Amazing, amazing, amazing. I highly recommend you take some time today and look it up. If you just Google Tower of Voices, you will find the story. We continue next hour with Carrie and Sarah Wood. What are they talking about?
Actually, I've just found out it's just going to be Carrie.
Carrie Wood.
Yeah, and he's talking about the Wood Family Foundation. They are doing a ribbon cutting coming up at the Yates Elementary School because they did a resource center there. And then they have their warm-up coming up there, like gala. So.
And Tom Skilling will be on talking about the potential damage of Hurricane Florence.
Tom Skilling... I texted him. You said you wanted to talk to him about the hurricane, and so I sent him a text, and he responded, "Yes, absolutely!" ! I would love to marry ! Can't wait to talk to you guys tomorrow! ! Call me at this number!
Tommy. Yeah. Tommy's a human.
He's the most excited.
He is a human ! That's what he is. Gina, you have the answer.
I do. It's Matt Davidson.
Is it Matt Davidson, Super Joe? Is that
ding, ding, ding. Oh, nice.
Congratulations, Gina. How do you know your trivia?
Because I'm a huge Sox fan, and I love Matty D.
Gina, do you follow him on Instagram?
I do, as a matter of fact.
Isn't he? He is an adorable personality on the social media, I think.
He is. I have to say, though, that my boys are huge Sox fans, too, and I tell them all the time that Maddie is my favorite Maddie since Christy Mathewson. So.
Okay.
Wow.
I like that one.
How about that? And you're going to the game. Well, yeah, the tickets for the White Sox. Family Four to see the White Sox play. You might have heard of them, the Chicago Cubs.
That's a good game.
That's a great game.
Yep. On Friday, September 21st at 3:10.
That's good.
How about that? Four just tickets for that.
Sox. Wow.
Congratulations. I'm glad you listened. Thank you, Gina.
Super Joe.
Thank you so much.
The third person that probably will be in that set will be Shohei Ohtani, because he has 17, 18 home runs right now, and he pitched a...
Oh, he might have actually got it since I wrote that trivia question.
Well, no, he's close. Yeah. He's 17 or 18. He's not there yet, but it was a 20 home runs in three innings, right?
That's what, and then there's Arigato Washington, who's coming up in the system. We'll come back.
Is he really?
I don't know what I'm talking
about. Is he at Kannapolis now?
Yeah, he's at Kannapolis right now. Coming back with your news next, 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
Steve Cochran on 720 WGN.
La 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 la, la 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 la, la la la. 9:10 now. Carrie and Sarah Wood have raised an awful lot of money for an awful lot of good causes in this town. We'll talk about the foundation in just a second, but first, good morning, Woody. How are you?
Excellent. How are you guys?
We're doing fine. Doing fine. Doing fine. Did you get caught up in that Bears game last night?
Oh my God! Yeah, I did.
We're trying to find the right analogy. Do you remember the movie Fatal Attraction?
Yeah.
Do you remember when Glenn Close was dead in the bathtub and she sat up with a knife? That's Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah. You know, and it wasn't even... Yeah, I guess it was a lot of Aaron Rodgers, but I don't know. I tell you what, though. The Bears, if we can get that team we saw in the first half...
First three quarters, even.
Right?
I mean, the third quarter was weak, first three quarters. Yeah, it was a lot of positive.
I thought they looked great. I thought they looked great. We still lost, but I thought they looked great.
Yeah. All right. Now, listen, you're a guy that pitched through tons of injuries. So how tough is this for Michael Kopech at the beginning of his career when he comes up for the White Sox? It looks like everything's coming up roses. Got a little tweak in his shoulder. Doesn't really talk about it, supposedly. His velocity is down. Next thing you know, Tommy John surgery. Is this more mental or physical for him to come back in all likelihood?
You know, I don't know the history of it. Like, you know, Tommy John obviously is one thing. Dealing with a shoulder, feeling something in your shoulder at a young age is a totally different red flag for me. Tommy John is happens. It's common. It's pretty cut and dry surgery. We know what we get. Doctor does his job. You do your job in the rehab. You're going to be fine. You're back. You know, you start dealing with shoulders. That's a different whole nother animal. You know, that's more scary to hear him say that he felt something in his shoulder than the whole elbow Tommy John thing.
Yeah. Well, we wish him luck. I mean, he seems like a good competitive kid, and the White Sox certainly need him.
No, I mean it's going to be mental, right? His mental, the ability for him to realize that he's going to miss the rest of this year, most of probably all of next year, you know, and mentally be able to still come in and get your work done and stay positive. So it's going to be tough for a young kid, especially at his talent and how bad we all know he wants to be out there. It's going to be tough.
Hey, Kerry, did the White Sox get mentors or players from the past who may have gone through this kind of stuff to help out with a young player when they have to face this kind of mental difficulty?
I'm sure there's guys in that clubhouse that have stories. They've all lived the life. They've played the game. Even the coaches, they've all been around it. They've got plenty of people for him to be in contact with to talk him through any kind of situation he's going to go through. So that's the good thing about being in that baseball family. There's been many guys before him that have been in his situation right now, and there'll be guys after him that'll have to go through it as well. So he'll be surrounded by you know, his baseball family that'll help him get through this.
Hey, Woody. Speaking of mental approach, the Cubs sat through, I believe, a little under 11 hours of rain delays over the weekend in Washington. I mean, it was really an unbelievable situation, and as a result, they're going 30 days consecutively without a day where they don't have to go to the ballpark. What sort of a drain does that put on a team mentally, especially at this time of year and when you're right in the middle of a race that's gotten pretty tight?
Yeah, well, that's the thing, right? Like, you sit there for that series, you lose two, and you got to go. The biggest thing is, you know, you come back in, you're playing a team that's chasing you, nipping at your heels, two games behind you. So you got to come home and perform right away after sitting down for, you know, sitting around and waiting for the rain to stop for that whole series before. And then when you finish that, this series is going to be a grind. When you finish this one, it's a huge series. You're going to go fly on your only off day you're going to have. You got to go fly back and make up a rained out game in D.C. where you just left and you didn't want to be there in the first place. So turning around, playing that many games in a row, losing that off day, going back to D.C. to make up that game after this series, you know, it's never an ideal situation, but it's baseball. It does happen. You got to answer the bell. You got to get up and you got to get it done. Your concern is obviously your pen and your arms when you play that many games in a row without a day off. But it's September. We've got some extra arms down there, and you got to go get it done.
Who concerns you more, Brewers or the Cardinals?
Well, if the Cardinals catch us, it's it doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, so I think it's the one that's closest to you. I think St. Louis is always, will always be in the back of my mind, anyways, as a Cub fan and as a Cub player. But I think your focus is right now on your only focus should be on Milwaukee. But your only focus really should be on you and getting your rest and getting out there and being ready to play every day. And if we play our baseball and stay healthy and there's 20 days left, get it done. We won't have to worry about Milwaukee or St. Louis.
You know what the Cardinals are? They're like Glenn Close from Fatal Attraction. You think they're dead in a tub and he set up with a knife.
They're the Packers.
Woody, I need some more analogies. Carrie and Sarah Wood, Family Foundation, a ribbon cutting coming up at Richard Yates Elementary School in Humboldt Park for the Storybook Gala. Explain what happens here.
We've got a couple things going on. This is a big year for our foundation. We run my wife and I have a foundation, the Wood Family Foundation, and we run a mentoring program. We started in Lawndale Community Academy in North Lawndale. We've been there for 4 or 5 years. It's our fifth year there. We've started with incoming fourth graders. Fourth through eighth grade is our target. We try to mentor those kids fourth through eighth grade. So our original fourth graders are now eighth graders this year, so it's a big year in that school. And a big year in respect from the foundation's standpoint, as we're going into our second school on Wednesday, we'll be cutting the ribbon on our second elementary school, which is Yates Elementary in Humboldt Park. So we'll be bringing in our incoming fourth graders and starting the program with them as well at that location. So a big year for the foundation, and then obviously our gala is our big fundraiser, which is coming up on the 21st of September. But we are very fortunate; we're sold out, so all good on that front.
Right.
But that is our big fundraiser for the year. We do a couple other throughout the year to kind of raise funds and collect mentors, but really our obviously any kind of foundation, any kind of charity work you're doing, you need dollars, and we're in a different situation. Obviously we need dollars as well, but we obviously need mentors and people that want to give their time and help change a child's life. A couple days a month, come in and find a way to get involved. So that's what we've been up to.
Send them to the website. What's the website?
WFFPitchIn.org.
WFFPitchIn.org. And did Sarah pick out your suit for the 21st day?
She's got her dress picked out. She hasn't really helped me yet, so I'll probably wear the same one I wore last year.
Oh, that's good. Take it to the dry cleaners. You know. Hey,
Carrie, the Pitchin and the foundation particularly works with kids more in the middle grades than high school or early or pre-K.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that? Why focus on resources that are needed for kids in the middle grades?
I think in the communities we were looking at, they had resources for the younger schools and some of these communities and some great ones for the high school kids, right? And I think that we found a gap in the middle school kind of area, or that age group, and thought we could best serve the community by hitting that weaker spot. So that was really why we kind of targeted fourth through eighth graders. And honestly, a lot of times in some of these neighborhoods that we've been in the past, if we don't get some of these kids by fifth grade and definitely by sixth grade,
it's over.
Unfortunately, you lose them. So we really thought that getting them before fifth grade and getting those incoming fourth graders and developing those relationships and developing that community relationship as well and getting involved in their community and staying there was a big key.
Things get underway at 10 a.m. on Wednesday, and thanks for all the work you're doing. You and Sarah both.
absolutely. I thank you and thank the community. We've had great support and great partners throughout this process, and we're always looking for more, like I said. And you know, mentors are the key, and for our kids' future anyways, and our that's the way we see it. So it's been a huge success, and we're growing, and we're looking to go into two more schools next year. So you know, we're very blessed.
Good for you. Any arguments in the house about Halloween costumes?
No, not yet. We haven't gotten there yet.
Okay. Will you let me know if you need me to referee?
Okay. It's hard. I got two daughters, and everything's like skimpy and short and lacy, and I don't know. I'm going to still stick them all in pumpkins.
Seems like the right call, Dad. All right, thanks, buddy.
Appreciate you guys. Thanks.
See you later. It's Kerry Wood. Just one of the great guys in sports.
Yep.
Period.
You mentioned, I mean, he had a lot of injuries in his career. And you wonder how much the White Sox want to surround Michael Kopech with guys who have been through it and came out of it and had successful careers.
What's the relationship with his mom? Seems like this is a mom time. Mom should come in. He's young. You know, fire him up to continue to go to work, listen to the doctors, do the right thing.
Wasn't there a time when they were like, going to just say all young pitchers should just have Tommy Johns to get it out of the way?
Is a school of thought that these kids, they come back better than ever after that surgery.
I mean, yeah, but you know, the other piece of this is,
but it's a
when
tough
did it start? It's like nut allergies. Yeah. When did it start? Right. When you started treating little leaguers to pitch counts. Makes sense in little league. But then all the way through in the minors, when a quality starts five innings, and then a guy can't take it. There's no endurance in his pitching machine.
They're also, they specialize so early. I know, like, Justin Verlander, he's one of those people, and Kerry probably is one of the, didn't start pitching till they were 14.
Hmm.
So, like, their arm wasn't getting the reps, you know,
The only way you can strengthen your arm is to throw a baseball. It's not like you can go and lift a particular weight a particular number of times. Dave, I have a question for you related to football. Obviously, a disappointing Duke game this weekend with Northwestern. But does Northwestern play Iowa State this year?
The Wildcats do not play Iowa State.
Are you relieved by that?
Am I relieved by that? Well, they do play Iowa, and Iowa beat Iowa State on Saturday.
No, I'm thinking of Iowa State, and here's why.
Okay.
They have a kicker with a very interesting name that you would have to pronounce, and I'm just wondering how you would handle that. Young man's name is Connor.
Yes.
Assalley. Connor Assalley is one way to pronounce it. But yes. I don't know the proper pronunciation, and I think it's a challenge for you as a play-by-play man on how you'd handle it.
It would be. And thankfully, I don't have to worry about it.
Mm-hmm. And imagine avoiding all the cliches and the word games that would pop into your head that you'd have to avoid as well.
Those don't pop into my head, Steve, unless them in my head.
Oh, sure they do. So Connor, Assalley. I don't know how you pronounce it. I just know it's nothing but trouble.
I would be more concerned. How about Colorado has a 31-year-old kicker?
Yeah.
Did you see that?
And grandfather. No,
he's not quite.
31 years old.
Yeah, from Australia, I think.
Yeah, he did a pretty good job this weekend.
Yeah, he did. That was a big win for them against Nebraska.
So, and why is he 31 and still in school?
When he was in Australia, he took part in football. I don't know if he was playing rugby or not. I forget the whole story.
So he just had this eligibility when he came here?
Yeah, he's the oldest player in FBS football.
If I right now said I wanted to go back to school, I wanted to go to DePaul, or I want to go somewhere, and I was like, I want to play sport, I want to play basketball. Could I try out talent for the team at 44? Would they let me do that? Or
would they let you do it?
But is my well, let's say I was a freak, I was really good. I was like the Steve Nash.
That's why you would get the try.
I think it would be
would they let a 44-year-old play?
It would be a publicity thing to get somebody from WGN to play. That's the only possible redeeming value.
But I could be eligible. That's
looks like
point.
Justin.
Yeah, you could
back
be eligible.
Well, do we know that Justin didn't play 4 years of?
No, I'm saying I'm assuming he didn't play.
I didn't, yeah,
no college.
I think we would have heard about that by now because we hear about softball all the time.
We could send Mary Vandeveld. Mary Vandeveld, you're very athletic. We could send you.
To where?
To the tryout that Justin's having.
Yeah.
For basketball? No.
For whatever.
Speaking of age, did you guys see Adam Vinatieri?
Yeah.
He's 45. He's still kicking.
He just keeps cooking.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I love it.
Yeah. I like when the old guys do well.
Me too.
Tiger, is he still playing well?
Let me check.
All right. We'll have that coming up here in a few minutes on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
I was talking about the anniversary of 9/11 tomorrow. It's a New York subway station that just reopened, like yesterday, 17 years later. And there's still people who worked the pile at 9/11 dying of cancer. You know, Jon Stewart from The Daily Show days worked very hard to change that, to make sure they were getting the services paid for that they deserve for being heroes in their time. But the shadow of 9/11 is still a part of our lives. So, but the next big anniversary would be the 20th, right? And that's why the security of this country is so important, because we don't hear about the threats they stop, which is why it'd be very nice if Donald Trump would support the men and women of all 17 agencies to do that. Hey, we have a new Miss America. Last night in the new Miss America pageant, which has turned into more of a book club now, the new Miss America, I believe, was Miss Michigan.
I did not include that on the top six because I knew that you would ask me how to pronounce her name, and I couldn't.
I'm sorry, Miss New York. Miss New York. Nia Imani Franklin?
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah. She met reporters soon after winning the crown, said she's glad there was no swimsuit competition because she could eat more. I didn't watch it. Anybody watch it?
Mm-mm.
No.
No.
Was there a Bears game on or something? I'm happy I didn't have to win this title tonight. I'm happy that I didn't have to do so wearing the swimsuit to win this title tonight, because I'm more than just that. I believe what happened is all the girls, all the ladies, all the women were asked to expound more on their personal views. And normally that runs into a problem. You know, in the past, you get the answers that don't quite add up and, you know, some gotcha questions turn into viral moments. It seemed like it was fine. So, who knows? But I can't imagine the numbers were great, but maybe they were.
You know, all I really care about is if there was some pageant owner that walked through beforehand just to make sure everything was okay.
The backstage guy that would, like, trick his way into the backstage.
That's all. I didn't know that was a thing, and now I know it's a thing, so I'm just wondering if that's a thing.
It could be a thing, now that you put it that way.
Yeah.
Tom Skilling on the potential impact of a monster hurricane on the East Coast coming up here in just a little bit, which obviously could infect not only the people you know in those areas, but your travel plans all over the country as soon as Thursday. It's 9:29. Headlines first. That's coming up 7:20 WGN. Well, unless you're flying a plane into the eye of the hurricane, you're going to need help figuring out how bad Hurricane Florence is going to be. And I've checked all the models. Our friend Tom Skilling is standing by. Is he good to go? Is that a yes? Tom Skilling is standing by right now. Tom, you know, I've looked
Hello, Steve.
Hello, my
Happy
friend.
Happy Monday.
Happy Monday to you. I've looked at the American model, the European model. I've looked at the GFS.
Done your homework.
Yes. Looks like a key to this equation is going to be the next 24 hours. True or not true?
Well, I tell you, the next couple of days, it looks like where everything to proceed as is currently expected, this storm could go ashore somewhere toward early Thursday. But with waves preceding it by days, because this thing, I'll tell you, Steve, this is one mammoth storm. One of the researchers whose tweet I read yesterday observed that I thought this was interesting. It's the first time since 1998 that the National Hurricane Center has ever predicted a 145-mile-per-hour sustained wind in a hurricane of any kind in the Atlantic since all that time, in 20 years.
Wow.
So this puts the storm on the upper end of the spectrum, and it's looking now like this could go ashore as a Category 4, 140 to 145-mile-per-hour sustained wind hurricane, which would put its gusts up around 170. But, you know, we get these wave height models, and they're indicating waves in the center of this thing of 40 to 52 feet. That's four to five stories.
It's monster movie stuff. And on top of that, what's the story about the it's stalling just off the coast and getting, you know, one of these Houston rainstorms like we had last year?
Well, that's it. You know, it's interesting. That was the observation that has been made by a number of forecasters, that this thing could be the Harvey of 2018. Harvey, for those who forget, was that storm that unleashed 50-plus inches of rain on Houston. And this thing, you know, it's really interesting because as these hurricanes move toward the mainland, the air vents out the top like air pouring out of a chimney, migrates hundreds of miles away and sinks. And so this is a good news story for Chicago, because what it'll do is build a big dome of high pressure and warm high pressure within which air is sinking, compressing, and drying, not only here but over the northeastern U.S. The problem is that slows this thing down. And this thing could kind of loop the loop for days over the mid-Atlantic and areas like that. We're already getting indications of 14-inch rainfalls in parts of North Carolina, and that number could be very conservative if this thing decides to slow down. So flooding is going to be a huge issue, as will storm surge, waves, wind damage. This is the whole group. And it's interesting, it's one of three hurricanes now roaming the Atlantic. And this is prime time in hurricane season, but it had been fairly quiet up to this point with most of the development going on far at sea. Now these things, there's one headed for the Leeward Islands that were so devastated by Irma and Maria last year. And there's another one going into the Cape Verde Islands off Africa. And they're all hurricanes. So, and then we've got a tropical storm or a hurricane headed for Hawaii that'll probably be in tropical storm form in the next few days as it crosses the island. So they have tropical storm watches out there. So it's a crazy period, Steve. Lots going on.
Justin, say hi to Tom.
Hey, Tom. Last year we saw a really, really heavy hurricane season, like you mentioned.
Oh, it was
Maria,
awful.
Harvey.
Yep.
Is this now the expectation that we're going to have this kind of activity, hurricane activity, year every year at this time of year?
Well, you know what? A lot of conditions conspire to produce strong hurricanes, but there's no question our oceans are warming. And the expectation of climate modelers has been right along that there wouldn't be more hurricanes, but the ones that would occur would tend over time to get stronger, and also more prolific rain producers. And we're seeing that on all fronts. I mean, look at the frequency of flooding. And on the other hand, where you're dry, as they are in the West, the drought gets worse. So the bottom line is you go toward a regime of more extremes. But, certain hurricane seasons will be stronger than others. We have an El Nino going now out in the Pacific. When that happens, it's interesting. It kind of increases the upper winds over the Atlantic Basin and tends to thwart development over the Atlantic, the Gulf of Mexico, the Caribbean, cut the numbers down while the Eastern Pacific gets active. So you superimpose natural cycles like that on top of a warming atmosphere that holds more water vapor and a warming ocean. And you find yourself with more of these active seasons and active storms within these seasons.
You know, I wonder what communities, I mean, this gets a little bit out of weather, but when you start talking about the Carolinas and Florida and that kind of area, the Southeast, and this is going to be something they're going to have to deal with each and every year, do you see a rethinking of the infrastructure, rethinking of how this season plays out and how they protect themselves against this kind of weather pattern?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, rising sea level is becoming more and more an issue. They were pointing out, one thing about this storm going into the Carolinas, we're in a lunar phase now. Anybody who's been near oceans and coastlines knows that the moon phase has something to do with the height of the high tides you get. We're in a high lunar cycle right now, and by the time Florence goes ashore later this week, it'll be kind of in between the peak phase and the normal phase. So we'll have an elevated storm surge, and were that storm to go ashore at high tide, the damage would be incredible. And these communities along the East Coast are increasingly vulnerable to it, and yet the building goes on, for instance, in Miami, and there's an interesting setup down there. They get what they call these fair weather king tides that flood even during the sunshine.
Right.
And they'll be building these high-rise condos down in Miami, and the construction site is being flooded by these king tides already.
There's an ongoing argument. It came largely off last year, but an ongoing argument about federal flood insurance and FEMA.
Oh, yeah.
And why should those of us who chose not to live on the coast have to spend the kind of money it takes to save those that do? Well, partly because we're human beings, and we need to deal with that in non-storm times, and now we need to focus on helping everybody that's going to need help. So is there any chance at this point that this sucker could turn dead right and go back out into the ocean?
Look, I'll tell you something. There's always a range of solutions. But what seems overwhelming at this point in time, Steve, is all of them in some way, shape, or form are bringing this into the coast. Now, the area anywhere from Georgia north to almost southern Virginia seems the area that is going to have to watch really closely. In fact, the governors of three states out there have declared states of emergency. That's Virginia, North, and South Carolina. And they're telling folks the South Carolina government is actively promoting these weather apps that people can download, and it tells them how to escape, you know, because the evacuation of these shorelines takes, you know, days.
It does.
These interstates and highways clog with people, and the highways become almost impassable. So you've got to start thinking about telling people to move ahead of time. And you always have those hangers on who believe, I've gone through this before, I'm going to stick it out, you know. And they tell, you know, they're taking to telling people, write your social security number in ink on your body, on your arm or something.
Right.
So that if you lose your life, we'll know who you are, you know?
And it's 40-foot wave possibility.
Now, Steve, that would be offshore. That would translate in terms of crashing waves to something like a 20, 25-foot surf. But that is phenomenal, you know? Can you imagine that sort of surf? And this is going to precede landfall by days. What it's going to do to, say, the Outer Banks of North Carolina? I was looking at one of the webcams out there now, and you can see there's some elevation in the wave action, but this is only the beginning. Those folks are in for a rough ride. I think communities like Wilmington, Cape Hatteras, Myrtle Beach, all these areas are going to have to be watched. Hilton Head, those will be the areas that watch this really, really closely.
Yeah,
and then inland, you go into Raleigh, Charlotte, areas like that, and perhaps as far north as Virginia, the nation's capital. Ultimately, if it stalls and does the loop-de-loop thing out there.
Yeah, Charleston all the way to Hampton Roads is still the target area until it gets smaller.
Yeah. That's it.
So,
and, you know, this thing has probably the most perfect environment for strengthening I've ever seen. It weakened for 2 days because it ran into 30, 40 knots of wind shear. The wind shear, that's the change in wind speed with height, is gone. So there's nothing inhibiting it from terms of wind shear. And the ocean temperatures and the depth of the warmth of the ocean out there is quite large. So it has a perfect fueling system available to it right there, because these things ingest latent heat energy from the warm ocean waters. So it's one of the ironies of a hurricane that the most powerful wind-producing storm on Earth requires a relatively quiet environment in which to get its act together, and it's got it now. So
Mother Nature. We got to sit her down and have a talk.
She'll listen to you, Steve. I'll tell you. The folks out there, there's absolutely nothing humorous about this. I'll tell you, we've got to feel for those folks out there, and we do, you know?
It's awful. Yeah, we need to get together now to help the people who are going to need it, and then we can have the political arguments about where we go from here.
And by the way, you're right, Steve. You know, our National Flood Fund is broke.
Right.
It is broke, and it's the only way in which folks out there can insure their property in many cases through the government.
Right.
And if that area is going to keep getting hit and sea level is going to rise, at some point, somebody in the political realm is going to say, hey, it doesn't make any sense anymore to keep funding this, these flood insurance programs.
It's my friend Tom Skilling, your friend Tom Skilling, our friend Tom Skilling. He's the greatest. He never admitted, but he is. Thank you, buddy. I appreciate you doing this.
Steve. Steve, thank you. Happy Monday to you, and let's hope things turn better somehow. But it looks pretty bleak.
All right. Well, I know you'll keep us up to date. Thanks, buddy.
I wonder when's the last time that Tom got sent out to cover a storm, like
where you have to hold on the tree.
Yeah,
hold on to the tree while it's raining.
I know he's manning Weather Central over there. So
you can't do that. You can't put the
you can't risk the franchise.
Like all the Beatles flying together.
Yeah. No, you cannot risk the franchise. Skilling goes down, we're all done. This place will be a parking lot in 15 minutes. Earlier today, we had a very angry caller call the show. And she suggested I shut the hell up and play Kenny G music. And she hates Kenny G, but she'd rather hear Kenny G than me. I'm sorry, what'd you say?
You're like a dog barking. That's what you are. You're like a barking dog.
This makes dogs bark.
So a show of hands on who agreed with her. You're in the room. Show of hands.
Silent vote.
What happened there, tough girl? Huh?
Oh, well, I assumed it was implied that I agreed with her sometimes, just sometimes.
Right.
Yes, you said you agreed with her on the air. That's what you say.
It's a fairly strong implication.
Will you quit talking over this lovely music? I'm grooving.
I'm ruining the Kenny G. All right. I got to ask Bill about tennis here in a minute because he plays a lot of it. And I'm sure Serena called him as soon as she was done breaking rackets and yelling. You work hard for your money, and your local Chevy dealers want you to know more in a few minutes. First, coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Bill and Wendy are here. Turn your respective microphones on since I have no idea what they are. What was your feelings on the Serena Williams outburst? Partly right, partly wrong?
You know what? Partly right and partly wrong. I don't see her being treated poorly. She maintains that every time she goes to the U.S. Open, there's a double standard, and I don't really see it. But I'm not.
Poor sportsmanship, though. I mean, come on.
She ate up a lot of time demanding that the umpire apologize and things. And
she right about the sexist part?
I don't see the sexism.
Well, which part was she right about?
She was right that maybe having 15 points taken away, a game of tennis goes 15-30, 40-0, having a point subtracted is a lot of points. It's
point
only one.
And a game.
Yeah.
It's
a
big deal.
Yeah. So I kind of see that, and she pled her case, but I don't know. I to some extent, people say, well, she's just being herself. She's being kind of a diva. Mm-hmm. I don't really see it that way. Fight for what you believe in. I'm a huge proponent of that, but that's a tough one to call.
But John McEnroe made that famous, and that's a big counterculture part of tennis.
Sure.
Right? This idea of arguing with the
umpires. But that's where the rules came from.
She has the right to do that.
Yeah.
The rules came after McEnroe was a pain.
Right.
But she ate up so much time complaining about it. I mean, the thing to do was say to yourself, all right, it cost me a point. I'll be better about it next time. And she didn't do that.
The superstars in sports, do they get more room to be divas?
Without a doubt.
Yeah. And she's the best in the game by far. Maybe the best ever, men or women. She's amazing.
You saw Michael Jordan commit fouls that he wasn't called for. You've seen pictures.
Craig Elo's right. Still crying.
Last night, even Aaron Rodgers was allowed to play on one leg. That's not fair. That's not in the rules.
When I think the sexism comes in, they say, you know, that she has a meltdown, but baseball players yelling at an umpire are, you know, being aggressive players. Right. Like the way that it's viewed is.
I don't like any of them yelling at a judge or an ump.
I'm shocked he didn't take more points away, saying the longer this continues, the more points I'm going to take away. I was expecting that, and that didn't happen.
There was a really awkward moment at the end when the USTA official, a female, said, well, this didn't work out the way we had all hoped. And I think she was talking about the big picture.
Yes.
But it sounded like, I'm just as upset as you are that Serena didn't win. So, all right. I'm sure you guys will talk more about this. We'll see you tomorrow.